Philadelphia, they're stargazing at the USFL's first division champs, while LA's enraptured by its newest star. The Birmingham Stallions can steal their way into the playoffs, but they'll have to hustle as we tumble into week 16 in the USFL. Jersey Generals are still trying to get turned around, but to walk off with a victory over Kelvin Bryant's Philadelphia Stars, the Generals will need help from everyone, not just Herschel Walker.
They're going to get some serious play on today, like they haven't seen all year.
All right, Ben, three seconds, Jack.
That's the truth.
One, two, three.
Philly's Chuck Fucina is counting on wrapping up the Atlantic Division title, but former star Joe Cugliari wraps up Kelvin Bryant for a two-point New Jersey present. Mr. Walker then shows off his dandy sleight of handiwork, decoy, while Walter Tullis gets the six. New Jersey's harshest critics have been known to pan their team, but today, it's the Stars who are having trouble getting their act together. The Philadelphia offense usually thrives on short passes, but Steve Folsom's near touchdown ends up making a general victory look even less far-fetched. The Stars' offense is being suffocated by the fire-breathing Generals, but Fucina's not ready to throw in the towel, even with Kelvin Bryant getting smothered by red shirts. Herschel Walker's also being stifled, averaging only 3 yards per carry. And down by six early in the third quarter, the Stars need only 1 yard from Bryant to vault into the lead. After a brutal first half, the Stars unleash a fresh Allen Harmon, who outshines both Walker and Bryant by gaining 44 yards on one play and 76 on the day. But Fucina's still looking for a way to turn Bryant loose. Though Kelvin is held to a season-low 24 yards on the ground, he gets 50 on one pass play, and it appears the Stars simply cannot be derailed. When Harbin finishes what Bryant started, Philly knows they're not far from a championship.
6 minutes. Six. Count. Six.
The Generals are held to 55 second-half yards, and Sam Mills, who's top dog in the doghouse defense, takes a final bite out of New Jersey. It's a 23-9 victory for the Atlantic Division champion Stars, who've wiped out every team in the league. Not bad, considering 4 months ago, few people thought it was even in the Stars.
It feels great. You know, this is what you play for. You play to win, and you play to get, and on professional sports, everybody wants to get to the playoffs, and that's what you guys talk about from the beginning of the season, and we're in them, and that's what it's all about.
We're going to the playoffs!
In Chicago, the home team still has a chance to sail into the playoffs as the Central Division champs. But the barriers at Soldier Field are the league-leading Tampa Bay Bandits. Must-win games may be old hat to George Allen, but Blitz quarterback Tim Cagle has been getting an education since Greg Landry's injury. Cagle quickly shows Tampa what he's learned and passes it on to Kevin Long. Rookie coach Steve Spurrier has his Bandits a game ahead of the Blitz, despite injury woes that would make Chicago's look mild. Second-string quarterback Jimmy Jordan is back from his injury, but needs first aid again after a Kent Lathrop tackle. So the seemingly jinxed Spurrier again asks his third-stringer, Mike Kelly, to step in for Jordan. Kelly played well during his first stint, but against Chicago's top-rated pass defense, he completes less than a third of his throws, while Cagle seems to be settling in. Getting Tim Spencer's first touchdown reception is a tough act to top, and the Blitz flies out to a 2-touchdown lead. Despite temperatures that reach 90 degrees in the stands and 129 on the field, Spencer's hotter than he's ever been as a pro, and he steams into the end zone 3 times. Spurrier, who used to throw for San Francisco, is treated to a Juan Marichal spike by the kid from Ohio State. Chicago fans remember their 42-3 win over Tampa, and so do the Bandits, who finally give their fans something to remember on a third-quarter TD pass to Willie Gillespie. They're down by 16, but there's still time, until Kelly joins two of his predecessors in being intercepted by Luther Bradley, who picked off 6 the last time these two teams met, and adds 2 more. Spurrier tries to figure out his Chicago jinx. Allen clinches his 13th straight winning season, and the Bandits succumb 31-8 as Tim Spencer becomes the newest hit in Chicago. Well, the USFL's hits just keep on coming, in Chicago and everywhere else. But not everyone can be a chart buster, and where there are hits, there are also going to be some misses.
I'll be honest again. I'll be honest again.
Are never overshadowed. But when it comes to game preparation, there's usually more than meets the eye. The Birmingham Phillies have to go through their paces before lining up beside their favorite team, the Birmingham Stallions, who are trying to outrun playoff elimination. Lonnie Johnson becomes the 7th Stallion to rush for more than 100 yards this season. And even quarterback Bobby Lane seems to be getting the Russian flu.
And 3, a fake by Lane. He's going to keep, he's going to score! Touchdown, Birmingham!
Leading 7-0 early in the first quarter, Birmingham figures, why not try to run it up? And kicker Scott Norwood gets to use his arms for a change. Norwood's surprising feat gets a well-deserved hand from everyone in Birmingham, and the home team rushes to take advantage of the recovery. Ken Talton has been gaining steadily, but the Stallions finally decide to mix it up.
Anderson, the wide receiver to the left, and here's Lane on 3rd and 11. Marching it in the end zone, Anderson! Got it! Touchdown!
Lacking the horses for an overland assault, Boston's Dick Corey confronts a 14-point deficit with an alternative approach. Johnny Walton, the league's most prolific thrower, pilots the offense with 42 tosses, and Frank Lockett pockets one. Still in the first, Walton looks for another of his 8 different receivers, and Louis Giamona's first USFL touchdown breaks up the shutout. The Breakers appear confident in their ability to come back through the air, but Birmingham's Michael Thomas sheds some initial doubt. When the 1-2 punch of Herb Spencer and Jimmy Walker connects, it staggers Boston. Walton had averaged less than 1 interception per game, but Spencer and the league's second-rated defense steal 4. Back in the saddle, Lane opens the gate for Lonnie Johnson, who scores his first 2 rushing touchdowns of the year. It's a 31-19 Stallion victory. So light up that victory stogie, coach, and savor the flavor. Well, it took a while for Oakland's Kevin Shea to get fired up, but now his kicking is cooking, and we're glad to Shea, he's our toe of the week. In the second game of the season, Shea missed 4 field goals against Birmingham and severely tested the patience of his coach, John Ralston, who decided to stick with him nonetheless. Now that patience is being rewarded. Shea has connected on 7 of his last 8 field goal attempts, and the San Francisco native has become one of the centerpieces in Oakland's attack. This week, Ralston showed lots of confidence in Shea in a crucial game with Denver. Shea responded with three more field goals, including his sixth of the season from 40 yards or more. And he turned the Oakland Coliseum into Shea's stadium. In Arizona, Wrangler fans are playing the role of sad sacks because their heroes have finished on the sorry end of things six straight times. Alan Risher is throwing against the Washington Federals, who are in the throes of a 10-game losing streak. It's Lost and Found football. But the Wranglers find themselves in the lead behind Calvin Murray. It's clear the Feds are in trouble again, and Kim McQuilkin has seen it all before. The Fed men of Ray Yawk have come so close so many times that even hoping seems risky now. Billy Taylor dares to take the plunge, and a long fourth-quarter field goal by Sandro Vitiello brings Washington to within a point. The Wranglers don't want to be the ones, but Risher fires it to Washington's Mike Guest, and here come the amazing Feds. This is where something always seems to go wrong, but this time, Greg James gets it right. Up by five, the Feds go for two, and for once, the brakes are going their way. Billy Taylor gets the score, and now it's the Wranglers who are riled up. Though the Feds are in hostile territory, there's no denying them their moment of glory. Greg James' game winner gives him a win in the West, and that's a wild feeling for the Wonders from Washington. The Central Division race is tight, but Michigan's staying loose, while L.A. is straining to get a foothold in the Pacific Division and hopes to come together behind quarterback Tom Ramsey. Bobby Hebert is Michigan's entry in this battle of rookie quarterbacks, but the 22-year-old Hebert just keeps demonstrating poise beyond his years. It's a 52-yard score for Derek Holloway, who had fallen upon lean times for 4 weeks. Ramsey's been recalling old times the past 2 weeks, dropping back and looking for his newest wide receiver and old UCLA teammate, JoJo Townsend, whose 82-yard reception turns into a leisurely Sunday afternoon stroll in the end zone. The Panthers' Terry Miller strolled through both New Jersey and Denver before joining Michigan, where he's made a happy landing by scoring 3 touchdowns in 3 weeks. L.A. coach Hugh Campbell could have used Miller, for his team is last in rushing. But the Express has been signing receivers like Anthony Allen, who's had no problem embracing L.A.'s offensive philosophy. It's back and forth, and Michigan's Jim Stanley has seen enough of L.A.'s rookie receivers, so the Panthers decide to show off the first-year hands of Anthony Carter. But it's the Michigan defense that finally interrupts the ebb and flow, holding the Express scoreless in the second half and forcing quarterback Ramsey to play defense. The Panthers figure if Ramsey can play safety, then tackle Ray Penny can certainly play tight end. And Hebert is always looking for eligible receivers. The Panthers' 42-17 victory is their 8th in 10 games, and they remain just one game out of first place. As the two Anthonys stroll off into the sunset, it's a good time to hand out some Tony Awards. First, to Anthony Allen for the outstanding play by an offensive player. Our Tony for the outstanding defensive play goes to that quarterback terrorist, Mr. Sack, John Corker.
Ball is batted away by Corker, who ran right by Wilson. They're calling it a fumble. Corker picks it up. Corker's racing down at the midfield at the 40, at the 30. He's being chased from behind and caught and fumbles the ball. It's bouncing around, goes in the end zone, and Michigan recovers it for a touchdown.
Oakland Michigan can step into sole possession of first place for the first time this season by overcoming Craig Penrose, Craig Morton, and the Denver Gold. Oakland's Fred Bassana still stands above all of the quarterbacks in the USFL, but with so much at stake, anyone who touches the ball quickly draws a crowd. As John Ralston muses on the scoreless stalemate, Jerry Aldridge turns the corner behind a Wyatt Henderson block. Aldridge ends up far from the madding crowd with an 80-yard trot and his second touchdown of the season. Though the dueling has just begun, the pluck by Aldridge seems to get Oakland's defense even more in tune. Gary Plummer's block eventually ends up in the hands of the invading force, and the defensive struggle continues for the first three quarters. Morton is unable to get anything more than a field goal against the seemingly immovable invaders. Finally, early in the fourth quarter, Penrose throws his first USFL touchdown pass to Johnny Dirt, who's already playing with his third USFL team. Ralston and Bassana have a 6-point lead to protect, and on fourth down, they figure it's no time to get timid. Jerry Aldridge leaves the Invaders just 23 yards shy of an insurance touchdown, but Nate Miller makes a premium interception and a bold payoff to David Dumars, who gets the goal headed in the right direction. Third down, and time is running out, so Penrose takes what the Oakland defense allows, but Harry Sidney gets gang tackled, forcing the chain gang to give the goal some bad news. But on fourth down, Sidney tries again, and through the dust, the chains come up gold. The next link is provided by colorful Vincent White, and the Denver drive chugs forward. With 2 minutes left, Sidney seeks the right-of-way and the go-ahead score. But the open defense says, wrong way, danger zone, do not enter. And when Dupre Marshall pounces, the official reading is that it's between the lines. Morton's magic spell is broken, and with a 16-10 victory, Oakland breaks away from the pack. But though the Invaders are on top, they certainly can't count on waltzing into the playoffs. Their remaining schedule is brutal, and Los Angeles faces three teams with losing records. The other big race is for the Central Division Championship and Wild Card. Five teams are still in the running for those two playoff spots. The 10-5 Bandits should have John Reeves back for the last couple of games, and with Reeves putting up passes, Tampa figures to put up a real fight. This week, the Bandits face ageless Johnny Walton and the 9-6 Breakers. Walton's experience should be a real asset to a young team that's doing anything it can to collar the wild card. George Allen's 10-5 blitz thrives by collaring ball carriers, and Chicago's superb defensive line also stands a good chance to wrap up a postseason berth. The 9-6 Panthers are led by their talented offensive line, which includes three former Steelers and a lot of big game experience. But let's look past the playoffs to next year.
And now, formally, I can announce the awarding of the Houston franchise, the United States Football League.
Less than a month after Commissioner Chet Simmons announced their existence, the Houston Gamblers hit the jackpot by signing Miami quarterback Jim Kelly. Kelly, a first-round NFL draft choice, is described as a tough, gritty quarterback with a howitzer arm. Despite missing much of his senior year with a shoulder injury, the Hurlin' Hurricane holds the Miami career mark for touchdown passes and passing yardage. Kelly, who gave Miami a real shot in the arm, now offers Houston fans high hopes, thanks to an owner who's sharing the wealth.
Although me and my partners, so-called, own this franchise, this football team, so to speak, the real owner of this team doesn't belong to us. It belongs to the fans of Houston, the football fans of the state of Texas.
This past week, Jacksonville was also awarded a franchise for next year, and North Floridians are already geared for what should be a great intrastate rivalry.
We're planning to have the Tampa Bay team play the Jacksonville team in the opening game of the 1984 season.
But on the same day, San Diego City Council heard Charger owner Gene Klein advise against bringing in a USFL franchise and voted accordingly. Still, Sid Gilman is convinced that his team will prosper wherever it ends up. Gilman coached the San Diego Chargers to their only championship as one of the pioneers of the old AFL. Now, Gilman is taking an offensive position in building himself another winner.
We're going to get the best that we can get because we have to fight for credibility.
So next year, there'll be several new teams and countless new revelers for tailgating parties. So whether it's outside the stadium or on the field, springtime football is a splash. USFL players and fans everywhere are diving in head first just to join the party.
We're having a party. Everybody's waiting. Dancing to the music. On the radio.
Have provided promotional considerations and contributed to the United States.